Hey, Chris Manning here from Locked On Cavs. Coming up on today's show, Evan and I are going to talk about high-end talent and why it's a need for the Cavs. That's all coming up today on Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast. And want to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get $10 off your next order.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My, my, my. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving. He's gone. Xbox at him tonight at the Q.
On the blow block. He put him in cement boots. Colin Sexton for two.
We're going to do a little role reversal today because we're going to talk about high-end talent, and I'm going to be the optimist. You're going to be the pessimist. I feel like usually I am the pessimist.
Yeah, it's a bit of a role reversal at this point. I'm usually overwhelmingly optimistic when it comes to these Cavaliers, but once you're giving me some of these numbers and you're reading off, you hate player comps, but I love them, and I'm just like, that's not good company for any of these. So yeah, no,
yeah.
Trying to glean some positives for me out of this, Chris.
I will. Just if you're listening for the first time, I'm Chris Manning, one of the hosts here on Locked On Cavs. I run for The Sword, also do the Ineligible Man Downfield newsletter. My writing has also been at places like Cleveland Magazine and Vice Sports in the past. And Evan is my co-editor at Fear the Sword, and my co-host here also writes
That's
at
good.
Forbes. I write at Forbes as well.
Yeah, no, we work at Forbes together. We host a podcast together. We work at Fear the Sword together. For those of you who watch SpongeBob, it's like that clip of SpongeBob and Squidward being connected at the heart. That's where pretty much Chris and I are at in terms of covering the Cavs, and maybe more, question mark, maybe there's a chance for romance, we'll see. Chris is a married man, but we're making this a little entertaining here. But Chris, you're
okay.
Pitching this to me, and
yeah. So this is the finale of our needs kind of series.
It's kind of a weird one.
Well, it's a weird one because it's very obvious, and yet I found this one in writing why it's a need just very hard to explain, other than the Cavs need really good players.
Yeah, I think that's a fair take to have in general. I mean, they have a lot of good players. A lot of good players. I think they're going to make the playoffs next year, but
well, I would make the distinction I would make is that they have a couple guys who are good now and a couple guys who I think they think are going to be good.
Yeah, no, I agree with that take. Like, there's some mystery boxage here. Like, I know you pulled up Darius Garland's numbers before the show and we're kind of going over them. Like, I think about Darius,
they're not good.
They're not great at all. Especially the players he's in company with, like, really not great. But he's a bit of a mystery box because we never really got a full package from Darius. I don't really want to say Dylan Windler has, like, such a high ceiling that he's going to be, like, a Ja Morant or a Zion caliber young prospect for these Cavaliers. But, yeah, just a good amalgamation of good players that maybe this is like the Toronto method, like you and I have talked about with the Cavs. Just assemble good to possibly great talent. Maybe you grab a star in there like Kevin Porter as well, a potential star in Kevin Porter as well. And you just accumulate assets and you build sustainable culture and growth and you work that way. But no, the returns aren't so great so far once you get into your nerd stuff like you do, Chris.
Yeah, I just for context, like, I don't use this as, like, end-all be-alls, but I find it helpful when I'm thinking about, like, checking my biases, checking sort of what the actual, like, what the impact is sort of beyond, like, the platitudes of numbers, because you can't have empty stats. Like, empty stats are a very real thing. The Cavs, I think, basically have three guys right now that I would say are if I'm not counting Tristan in this because he's technically a free agent and we don't know exactly where he's headed. Mm-hmm. They have three guys that I would classify as actual, like, good, real NBA players. Larry Nance Jr., Kevin Love, Andre Drummond. If you look at advanced metrics, Drummond rates out typically the best out of those guys. Nance actually is right there with him, and Love also rates out well. But the only two, Nance, according to, like, our friends at Beeble Index, and their PIPM stat, Nance is the best guy in that stat, and Love is second. Drummond's at third, and he's a slight negative, at least last year. I don't know about the year before, but that was last year.
Are we talking about Drummond right now?
Yeah. Drummond's like a slight negative in that stat, and, you know, obviously you'll have different things with with real plus minus and like and everything like that. But like I think the Cavs in terms of guys that they think are going to be good, it's Colin Sexton first and foremost, who I don't think rates out as well as I would think. I think like there's so much more potential there than what these stats sort of indicate, just because I believe in a lot of what he does. Mm-hmm. Jetty, I think, could get there, and then Garland and Kevin Porter Jr. are sort of the mixed bags in that. There's obviously a lot of concerns in terms of, you know, how they ultimately do them figure themselves out. You know, like I don't love player comps, you know this, but like one of the Kevin Porter's like biggest, one of his top three player comps in terms of the 538 model is like rookie year Zach LaVine, and like that makes a lot of sense to me.
Not a bad
you're just
player.
Hoping that he's like Zach LaVine, obviously is a good NBA player, like can score, but you're hoping that like the defensive issues, you know, not as much of an issue there and stuff like that. Like there are certainly guys that I think the Cavs believe can be good. I think we're and I think the Raptors model you bring up and that we've talked about before is a really smart one, just because like if you look at that team, I don't think they have like a top 20 guy in that team.
No.
Right? Like I would I,
mean,
I would
maybe
say
Pascal Siakam's on the outside looking in at the top 20, but that's about it.
You see Siakam, according, like, so if you go by VORP, like he's 40th. He's around 40th in the league. He's tied with like Steven Adams, Jared Allen, Hayward, Holiday, and him are like all guys in that 35 to 40 range that have like a value replacement about 2. That's it. But then they have Marc Gasol, they have Kyle Lowry, they have Van Vliet. They have like a bunch of guys that are all sort of top 100, top 80 guys, and then all impact the game in different ways. And like that is a path to success. Like OG Anunoby was, according to like VORP, like a top 50-ish player this past NBA season. And that's like not a guy that is obviously a star, but like they have a lot of really good players, and that is a path to get this. Because and, I mean, Evan, how many guys do you think are that are like bona fide stars that like really can will you to just a bunch of wins? Because I don't think there's like a ton of those guys. I think, I mean, it's really hard to win in the NBA. The talent level is mm-hmm. extremely high. There's only a certain number of guys, I think, that are going to kind of get you to a high level on their own, because there's even guys that rank very highly in advanced stats for the season. Like Damian Lillard is fourth in VORP, and like that was barely an 8 seed in the West. There are guys like I mean, like Kyle Lowry obviously is like 20th in VORP, tied with Ben Simmons and just above Devin Booker, but like that's like a three, like what a 3 seed, 2 seed in the West or in the East. Like there's only a couple guys that are really gonna drag you to the top of the top. Everyone else is gonna have like just the where we're at is gonna kind of be a battle to some degree.
Yeah, it's a little weird, and I'm thinking about it now, like in terms of players that can will your team to success and wins. I mean, maybe advanced stats don't view LeBron as a darling, but LeBron is always a tried and true answer. But Kawhi as well, because of how good he is on both ends of the floor, and how even though this Clippers team hates each other, like I mean, chemistry wise they're a mess. I mean, don't let the taunting on the sidelines when they're blowing out the Dallas Mavericks fool you. It's been reported this Clippers team doesn't like each other, but I think Kawhi is just so good, and he kind of sets the standard for them. I feel like it's just those two guys in LA, and then, like you said, you have to have a good collection of players. And, Chris, I'm actually curious, now that you have these numbers pulled up, like, look at a team like Oklahoma City. Where do they rank? Because that's a team thought, and a lot of people, myself included, thought was not going to be very good this year. Maybe advanced stats can paint a different picture to say, like, okay, no, this Oklahoma City squad, I mean, they're probably going to lose to Houston in the first round, which, you know, Russell Westbrook coming back earlier than expected is making that take look foolish in my mind. But it's just interesting to think, like, if you have a good collection of advanced, like, players with who test out positively with advanced metrics, like, you're bound to have success. And I feel like maybe Oklahoma City is a good example of that, because you said Siakam is in that Steven Adams-y range, which isn't mm-hmm. bad company. And if like he's there, I imagine Shea's doing okay for himself, and then Chris Paul is having such a bounce back season, as to him doing well for himself is a big thing too. Like, I don't know, maybe Oklahoma City is another player Cleveland needs to take an example from, but the problem is
I think OKC is another one for sure. And yeah, if you look at like their, if you look at how Bebo Index kind of like averagely rates out a bunch of stats, so you know, it has Raptor, it has real plus minus, it has like a bunch of the different metrics you can look for off for these advanced metrics. They have 6 guys that rate out as positives. Mm-hmm. Let me actually check the back. 1, 2, 3. 7 guys that rank out as positives, and then even a guy like Lugans Dort, who I really like, mm-hmm. like is a little bit of negative, but they have Chris Paul, Gallo, Adams, Nerlens Noel, Shea, Schroeder, Muscala, and Dortz. And Dort all kind of right in that range. Everyone, but Muscala doesn't really matter.
Muscala is a key piece to Oklahoma City's rotation.
Yeah. They have, like, competent guys, like, all the through and through, and, like, they're guys that have, for whatever reason, like, you know, like, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is just, I think, better than Colin Sexton right now. Better defender, better passer, has also been in better situations, and I think that's part of it. Like, Colin Sexton did not walk into, like, a good situation necessarily. Like, his rookie year Cavs were
kind of Donovan Mitchell with the Jazz. I understand. Proceed.
Right. Yes. Okay. Had to bring it up. But, like, he doesn't, like, and that matters, but there also is just, like, things he does that are sort of, like, I think there's just parts of his game that have translated better, and Colin, for better or for worse, like, has parts of his game that I think are a little, like, just hard, like, what he is a little bit, like, less seamless into, like, a couple different situations. Like, the way he shot, like, the way how much he shoots and stuff is just, and how much that is predicated into his success is just a little different than what, like, Shea does, and what, you know, Ja Morant is just a better passer than him and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Colin coming into the NBA was never known as a passer under Avery Johnson's offense at Alabama, but he also wasn't known as a three-point shooter, and that changed, but I don't think after two seasons of Colin at this point, I don't really think we're going to see a dramatic jump in terms of, like, a Ja Morant, like, playmaker, or even a Chris Paul or Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. I mean, Chris Paul, never mind, he's the point god. So a Shea Gilgeous-Alexander type of playmaker. Like, Colin is always going to be a score-first guard. Darius is always going to be a score-first guard who has more potential as a passer. But, again, we don't have a lot to work off with when it comes to Darius. But, no, I think I don't want to put a cap on where Colin Sexton can go, but based on his flaws and deficiencies as a player, we're starting to get a better idea of who he is. And it's defense, it's playmaking. I mean, Colin can score in a multitude of ways, and he's a multifaceted offensive threat, but he's just a mess elsewhere. And, I mean, was showing semblance of competence under JB as a playmaker, but that's such a small sample size, too, so I don't really know if there's much to work off of with that. But if we get more of it next season, God knows whenever that is, they'll give us more to work with. But I think, yeah, we're just starting to see, like, Colin maybe can be competent at his flaws, because I just think he is a hard enough worker to do that. But I think when you look at advanced metrics, there is a good way to maybe start figuring out, like, what is Colin's cap exactly, at least in some areas of the game.
Yeah, we're gonna talk more about who we think could get to, like, a high level player on the Cavs coming, you know, up after this break. But Evan, why don't you tell everyone about one of our sponsors on today's show?
Well, one of our sponsors on today's show is a local sponsor that we love near and dear. Chris, we're such big fans of the people over at Ohio Versus everyone and the work they do, right?
Yeah, they're great. Mike Bassetti, one of the people running that site, is going to be on the pod later this week.
Okay, very excited to have you on, Mike. But if you haven't checked out Ohio Versus Everyone yet, you're really missing out. The site covers all Ohio sports and pop culture. They have in-depth, interesting articles about the Cavs, Browns, Indians, and even the Buckeyes, and whether or not Ohio State is actually going to play fall football this year. Actually, an interest, since this is a Cavaliers podcast, an article that I really enjoyed of theirs was they're talking about Tristan Thompson having a role on the team next year, which is written by Thomas Valentine, and Nick Grossman also made a compelling argument that the Cavs should re-sign Matthew Dellavedova, which I am a fan of that move, as long as it's cost-friendly. But, like I said, it's all your favorite teams, all in one site, and because they cover all the teams, they only bring you the best, most interesting topics. Check them out. Again, it's ohioversuseveryone.com. That's OhioVsEveryone.com.
And with that, we're going to be right back with more Locked On Cavs. All right, we're back here on Locked On Cavs. I'm Chris Manning. He's Evan Demerol. Evan, how many guys on the Cavs would you say have a chance to get to like good guy on a playoff team level?
This is a tough question because I'm going to assume Kevin Love and Andre Drummond aren't here past next season. So
yeah, that is part of it. Like, I think Kevin could be, but like, I also, like, really struggle with Kevin, and we should probably just do, like, a whole Kevin Love out. Like, we should actually do a Kevin Love week at some point. So we'll come back to this. Check this off for listeners for later. I'm going to write this down.
When I updated my wardrobe with Banana Republic and Kevin Love, an episode.
Yeah, I did a Barstool podcast though. A little loses, like, a point. For in my book shame. For that. Tough look. But Kevin come on the pod and talk about PTA instead of going to talk to Big Cat. But
for real,
when I Kevin is not Minnesota Kevin Love anymore. Like, no. Kevin Love in Minnesota is like a top, what, 10, 20 guy, and now, like, he's just
empty calories
not.
Too. So he's just a okay. He's a good guy, still putting up empty calories.
But, how many current Cavs do you think, like, if they were to make the playoffs in 2 to 3 years, do you think actually could be like, okay, this guy can like hang in a playoff series?
I feel very comfortable in saying Larry Nance Jr. is one of them, because Larry has evolved his game considerably since joining Cleveland, and he is their best defensive player, and you can make a case as one of their better offensive players at the moment. See, this is a tough question. I think Darius might have the potential, and I believe Colin could as well, but it just, like, again, it depends on a lot of his deficiencies just not becoming major glaring weaknesses of his. And I have faith in Kevin Porter Jr. because, like you said, he compares, at least in terms of advanced metrics, to rookie Zach LaVine. Like, that's not a bad player to be in company with. Like, Zach LaVine is an all-star caliber player at this point. If he has the same career growth as Zach LaVine, by all means, the defensive concerns are glaring, but I don't know. I feel like if you had a gun in my head, like, I'm more than certain about Larry Nance, and then I'm kind of, like, indifferent on the rest of this roster, but you could talk me into Kevin Porter and Colin Sexton and then maybe Darius as well. What about you?
I would agree with that list. I think it's those four guys, and Windler is just like, we'll see what the 50-year-old rookie looks like.
By the time Dylan Windler debuts,
he's just going to keep getting older.
He's going to be older than John Boehlein himself.
Yeah, didn't drink his milk. But I think, like, there are things about every guy that makes me think they could get there. Larry, I just think, like, would, like, look a lot better on a better team.
Oh, yeah.
If you put him on, like, Toronto, like, he could thrive in the, kind of what they do there, I think. Or Oklahoma City.
I mean, I told you, I'm doing a...
Houston, he'd be actually great in Houston.
Oh, he'd be awesome in Houston.
Oh, my God. Get
coach,
like,
offensive coach.
Larry Nance
Mike
Jr.
D'Antoni.
Is, like, in the Jeff Green role would be much better than what Jeff Green's doing.
Where you have Jeff Green and Larry Nance together, and it's just... But
I'm... Nice, two of the nicest human beings. But,
for real.
Like, he could get there. And then I think the other thing, it's about betting on skill set. Like, Colin, he needs to get better in defense. But the potential for him to be a shot maker in the playoffs, I think, is there. That is also Darius's skill, and it's also, like, his passing, I think, can get him some interesting places. And Kevin Porter Jr., just the Cavs think extremely highly of him, and we'll see kind of what that ceiling looks like. But those are the kind of guys that I think get there. I think the question becomes, like, okay, even if it's, like, an OKC team or a Toronto, like, if it's a team like that, you're still having a guy kind of driving a lot of the success.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if it is a, like, commit, like, if it is the best version of a sort of, like, all-hands-on-deck team, you need one guy kind of driving it. Like, Chris Paul was, you know, like, a top 10 player this season, right? I don't think that any of these guys are going to get to top 10 player status. I think Colin could be, like, really, really good. I think Kevin Porter Jr. could be really, really good. I don't think top 10 is just, like, a really high bar to clear. But can they get – could this group kind of get to its own, like, Brooklyn Netsy? Like 2017-18 Brooklyn Nets-y kind of thing. I'm gonna look that up and kind of get the numbers on that and tell you what that would have to be in terms of the best guy in that team. But, like, those are the kind of models that pop into mind for me.
I think the Brooklyn Nets, that comparison is, like, their loftiest goal and ambition. I think
it's more realistic than Toronto and OKC, unless you get a guy that's gonna, like, change what you're doing. And I mean, of note, if you want to go back, like, 2 years and maybe the system got the league has changed, like, Andre Drummond was, like, a borderline top 20 guy, according to Forbes, in 2017-18. So that's worth noting as well. But I don't know if he's that guy now.
That's what Andre Drummond
can be that guy
again. Cute and shooting from the 3-point arc and trying to be a playmaker. I think, like, that's what Andre Drummond was accepting the player he was. That's a tired argument at this point. But I think the Brooklyn net. I think that Brooklyn comp for the 2017-2018. Nets for the Cavs, this current iteration of the Cavs, I think that's a fair comparison. But at the same time, it's just, like, there's so many. I was gonna mention this because you, like, talk about how Larry Nance would be really good on a lot of teams. I'm doing before I took my Twitter hiatus, I forgot I signed up for this, but great preparation on my part. I'm doing an NBA Twitter, like, NBA GM mock thing where we're, like, swapping players and picks, and I've gotten an overwhelming amount of trade offers for Larry Nance. None of them are very great, but a lot of teams, like, writers and people and our colleagues, I guess you want to call them, Chris, are interested in having Larry Nance play for their team, Brooklyn especially. Like, I think he'd be a lot of fun in Brooklyn playing alongside Kevin Durant and Kyrie, too.
Look, Larry Nance Jr. for me is officially like, he's how much do you actually know about the Cavs take?
I mean, Zach Lowe gave him a shout out, so that's pretty nice.
Yeah, and when salute to Kevin O'Connor when he was like, Bill and Ryan Russillo, you clearly have not given a shit about the Cavs, which I don't expect them to.
No, but most people don't. This, maybe besides us and.
Just to report back, the best player according to Warp on the 2017-18 Brooklyn Nets was 24-year-old Spencer Dinwiddie, who was around the 70th best player in the NBA that season.
Hmm. Well, he could use those advanced stats.
Kevin Love was 43rd in 59 games that year.
Well, that's because Kevin Love was on.
And LeBron was the best player in the league.
He was they were on a winning situation that year, so it makes sense why the Cavs were, or Kevin Love was doing so much better. I think, like, see this, because this roster, like, that it's going to reinforce my argument here that this roster is so weirdly constructed currently that, like, there's a lot of players. Like, you put Andre Drummond in a winning situation. I mean, granted, that situation in Detroit wasn't necessarily quote unquote winning, and their, like, peak was an 8th seed sweep at the hands of LeBron and the Cavs, but he was really good for the Pistons then. And, like, Kevin Love was really good for the Cavs when LeBron was still in town, and he was pretty good for the Timberwolves because he had the luxury of youth on his side still and not like a laundry list worth of injuries. It's just I don't know, it's just weirdly the way this team's constructed, but I think the 17-18 Cavs or Nets are a good comp. It's just, what do the Cavs do with some of these pieces that just don't fit to make that comp make more sense?
It becomes down to really smart roster management. This is where, like, Kobe Altman has to decide, like, okay, can I bet on this guy? And, like, it's like, again, we've talked about this a little bit before, but after next season, like, Colin Sexton is extension eligible.
Mm-hmm. I don't see him getting traded, so.
But it's like, do you get to, like, you, how the Cavs approach that stuff is really going to tell you a lot of what they do, but the drafts will also matter. Like, you know, what is, like, if they draft Isaac Okoro, how does he contribute to this? If they have another high pick in 2021, like, how does that player contribute to that? That's actually something we should talk about right after this break. But before we do that, I want to tell you about Built Bar. You know Built Bar. Built Bar is a great sponsor of the show, and they're back with their relaunch. The improved Built Bar is even deliciouser. They have 6 new flavors among their 18 overall, and the new flavors are caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. Those all sound amazing. And they have their old grade flavors that I know Evan loves and I love, including toffee almond, coconut, peanut butter brownie, and a whole bunch more. These are soft and easy to chew. They're covered in 100% chocolate, and they're great for the health-conscious guy. Help you lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. They're low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber, and great for a keto diet. And they have a great profile, too. So if you look at a new flavor like cookies and cream, who doesn't love cookies and cream? That has 17 grams of protein, 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and 4 grams of net carbs. And right now, if you go to BuiltBar.com and use that promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get $10 off your next order. Again, promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. Free cooler with purchase while supplies last. Again, promo code LOCKEDON, $10 off at BuiltBar.com. All right, we're going to be back and talking about high-end talent a little bit more right after this. Evan, I think the Cavs getting out of this era they're in, I think there are 2 ways you get out of it. Number one is you sort of build the team kind of like Brooklyn-y, and you get a bunch of really solid guys. No one that's great, no one that's like gonna define a franchise, but get you to a certain point, and like your organization, your culture, and all that stuff propels you in a way that makes sense. Or you get that as well, and you get the guy, and it's gonna have to be via the draft probably next year, that can propel you that way. And maybe it doesn't happen right away, but within a year or two, you want to get that, because, again, like, one of the benefits of having a young guy and a really good young guy means you can spend around him and kind of make things work. And, you know, like, if you, depending on what you do with certain contracts, depending on what guys want, like, that is going to be a consideration for the Cavs as they kind of move forward. Like, money is going to be a thing they really do have to consider. But for me, I just think about, like, I think those are the 2 ways out of this. Otherwise, you're just treading this mediocrity treadmill over and over and over again, unless you kind of find a way to develop your guys, because that is going to be so paramount. And number two, get the guys and get someone to come in and kind of raise the floor or the ceiling. And look, it is really hard to get Luka Doncic. It is really, like, those guys only come around every so often. Mm-hmm. Even a guy that we consider really good, like Trae Young, is not taking Atlanta by himself to a high, high level. Mm-hmm. But he sets the tone and kind of allows you to go a certain way.
Well, first off, you called it the mediocrity treadmill. I actually have a name for it. It's called the Josh Smith Atlanta Hawks treadmill of mediocrity, which is the Cavs, or, you know, you could call it the Andre Drummond Detroit Pistons / Josh Smith Detroit Pistons treadmill of mediocrity. Wow, Josh Smith is just a mediocre player for as talented as he was. But that's my fear, the Cavs are heading in that direction. And I just, based on what I've gathered and what I've heard, and I have something actually, we're recording this on August 31st, but I have something coming up on Forbes on September 1st where I just talk about the reality of the situation where Dan is really putting the squeeze on Kobe as well, where like the Cavs can't really afford to be bad because Dan is paranoid with fans not re-upping their season ticket sales or their season ticket packages, I should say. And they're worried they're going to really just fall in the wake of an Indians team who just traded Mike Clevenger but will still make the playoffs, and a Browns team that has playoff aspirations in a city that is predominantly a Browns town. And Dan doesn't want that, especially in his fancy new arena that he bent taxpayers over a barrel for. But yeah, I think this is still going to have to be a bit of a slow burn for the Cavs. I don't think it's a bad free agency class. Five is great for what the Cavs are trying to get in just terms of a wing player, maybe like an Isaac Okoro who has a lot of upside, because we don't really know how bad his three-point shot is, if it can be repaired by the Cavs or not. Like, that's a player with upside. Like, that's a great spot for the Cavs to be in to grab another good, maybe great player. And then they look ahead to next year's draft class, which the Cavs shouldn't try their hardest to be competitive. But at the same time, maybe they take the luxury of a jump, but they don't make the playoffs. But no, next year's draft class is uber talented. With the, obviously, as Trevor Magnotti said on our draft live show, he compares Cade Cunningham to a Zion-type prospect, and then about 2 through 7 or 8, I believe he said, there's a lot of Jason Tatum-like prospects who, if the Cavs are able to get a player like that, then you're kind of cooking with grease at that point. And the books open up a lot for the Cavs then, too, because Andre Drummond won't be on the books anymore, because I doubt they sign into an extension, if we're being honest here, because I feel like there's a little bit of fire behind the smoke of Tristan and Kevin saying that they should extend Tristan Thompson. Larry and Kevin saying they should extend Tristan. I'm sure Tristan would say it himself if he wanted to. But there's a lot of stuff behind that, and I just feel like the Cavs can't afford to have this be a slow burn because Dan Gilbert's getting impatient with how things are going so far. But if they're able to get that luxury and get off some of these bloated contracts and, you know, get rid of these aging players. I mean, Andre fits into the timeline, sure, but he doesn't fit with the Cavs are trying to build, in my opinion. And you get rid of an aging veteran like Kevin Love and put him in a winning situation and do right by him and just, you know, not completely burn all modicum of respect you have with free agents and agents in the league. Yeah, like 2-3 years, like the Cavs will be looking pretty, and like you draft Cade Cunningham and then you punt on Darius Garland or you sell high on Colin Sexton's upside when he's extension eligible, like Chris said, and like you really get something going there, and then maybe the Cavs have something at that point. But it's a fear of mine that the Cavs are marching the slow march of death towards being stuck as an 8 seed for that, because the Eastern Conference at the bottom at least is mediocre enough that the Cavs could maybe somehow flirt with that 8 seed. They're stuck there for 2 to 3 seasons. They're off Kevin's contract at that point. They're somehow extend Drummond so it matches the life cycle of Kevin's contract. They're off Drummond's contract at that point. Darius, and they can make a couple other ill-sighted moves, just, you know, completely hamstring themselves, and they're just back in this situation 2 or 3 years. Why not just do this right the first time so, again, you can build sustainable success? But I just don't know if it's going to happen, which is where my fear and frustration is.
There, you can't rush this. And the Cavs have tried to rush it before, and it has never worked. And if they don't learn their lesson, that is on them.
I mean, Dan learned his lesson with the John Boeheim hiring this year, maybe.
I mean, look, until the Cavs like actually prove to me that they've learned their lesson, I don't believe it.
Yeah,
you can do all the right stuff. Either talk about why JB is the kind of right coach you want, all that stuff. But until you actually like make it last, like,
I think JB's a fine coach.
I think he's a good coach. But I'm saying until you get to a point where like you're actually gonna let him be himself and like let him kind of work everything out the way you kind of are saying you want him to. Like, all it takes is one season where you don't feel like he met expectations and you fire him, and then that's stupid.
Yeah. I mean, it's like Friend of the Pod time when it just says things are bad, fire the coach, and I feel like that would be a huge overreaction, but I also wouldn't bat an eye if the Cavs fail to reach the playoffs next year, and then we get like a news press release that says like, oh, JB Bickerstaff's been relieved of his duties, and that's like the 10th coach in the last 15 years for the Cavs at this point. I'm not even exaggerating, but I don't know. I feel like the luxury of Kobe getting an extension and the Cavs like really committing to having JB be their coach, I mean, he's leading on the Cleveland side of things the initiative for working with the systemic racism issues with law enforcement and just in society in general in Northeast Ohio. Like, I think that's big and gives JB a lot of, you know, ammunition to stick around. And Justin Rowan was talking about this when he was on the show last week with us. I think JB doesn't have to coach in a situation where he's an interim. Like, he didn't get the interim
tag. Really good
point. Like, immediately, he doesn't have the interim tag. So maybe there's a little bit of stability coming from the Cavs, but I'm not going to, like, hold my breath or be surprised if it just kind of falls apart in spectacular fashion, because just there's never a dull... I was joking with somebody once. I'm like, there's never a dull moment with a team that is perpetually stuck in the bottom of the NBA. Like, and that's just saying something. I wish the Cavs could just be bad, but young and entertaining, but, like, there's not a lot of drama that comes with it.
It is everything and everything explained about this team that the times they've mattered have been because of one player. Uh-huh. And when they try to force without him, it doesn't work. And you have to try something different. And they've never been exactly willing to try something different in that sense.
No, they really aren't. And that's a lot of the just frustrations I have with this team as well. And building out of the shadow of LeBron's pretty hard, especially when LeBron's shadow dwarfs the entire city of Cleveland. But as soon as LeBron left, the Cavs became, I hate to say it, irrelevant. And they're desperately trying to maintain relevancy in a city that really could not care much about them in terms of.
We gotta get out of here, but here's the pitch of how to be relevant.
Do it, ready, Chris.
Number one,
yeah,
be a little more transparent with your fan base. Okay.
That's fair.
Like, just do it. It's not hard. It's not painful. And number two, don't try and like rush things.
No.
When you do things, and you do things like rashly and you're seemingly changing your plan all the time, it does not help anyone pay attention to you. It does not help anyone care about you. Like, even if you're going on and giving platitudes and stuff, like Andrew Barry and Kevin Stefanski often do, like when you're at least engaging. You are at least like offering people something to sort of understand what you're doing. Mm. When you do what the Cavs do and sort of button everything up and act like it's state secrets, it makes it harder, frankly. And number two, you cannot rush any of this. Like, this is, like, I think Colin Sexton's potentially very good. I think Kevin Porter Jr. I think the world of Kevin Porter Jr. I have more Garland stock than I think some people we know do. Those guys are just not, like, if you're going to draft them, give them time to become who they're going to be. Don't try and make them something they're not.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and I wholeheartedly agree with you. And yeah, it's just
2021, when or whenever the next season the Cavs play should not be the year they're trying to make the playoffs. They may like say they're trying to be competitive in that stuff, and that is the right message to send. Mm-hmm. But like, if the expectation from ownership and management is playoffs, that is a wrong expectation.
No, I think that is a wrong expectation. I think, like you said, winning and setting a tone, saying like, oh, we're not going to come out here and lose every game. We're not trying to intentionally tank. Like, I've said this a few times now. The Cavs are in a position where they are transitioning from a bottom feeder to just a bad team that's going to try their hardest because they have too many tryhards on this roster at this point.
Yeah. Evan, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
No, not really. I mean, I really hope I get my first dub in Fall Guys. Like, that's all I really want at this point, Chris. Like, I was going to make a joke about it at the beginning, but we kind of started talking. But, yeah, that's all I really want right now. And, you know, just for everyone to stay safe and please wear a mask. What about you?
Yeah, that's it. Wear a mask. Be safe out there. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Check out Fear the Sword for all of the different stuff we're doing. And be like Joel Embiid tweeting about Jimmy Butler on Twitter as the Heat are beating the Bucks in Game 1. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll talk to you soon.
Ty Windish is beside himself.
Pouring out for time. All right, guys. Talk to you soon.